Hi everybody, welcome to Wombat Radio. Today we're out on Cockatoo Island and I'm speaking with Atlanta Eek. Hi Atlanta.
Hi.
And we've already been sitting in the sun for a little while speaking about how small and representational theatre making can be, performance making, and then how grandiose the slow motion apocalypse has become. But I'm going to just start by asking you what you already turned back on me half an hour ago, which is, what are you busy with?
Well, right now we're on Cockatoo Island and we're busy with the death of the factory stage with the return to the Japanese New 2017, which is a work that I made for Alaska Projects.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are expanding it for the Underbelly Festival. But the piece is kind of, I don't know how to speak about it because, like, I made it by invitation last time, so it was like very much about navigating the context that it was being presented in and the conditions of the invitation. So I didn't have to do any writing about it before I made it.
Yeah.
And now there was an application process, but it was super vague. Like, I sent basically two quotes, and one was from J.G. Ballard, The Atrocity Exhibition, and a chapter from Crash, which is about kind of the raw masculine energy of the dangerous automobile in the 20th century and how it was the sexiest and most highly advertised commodity of that century. And that sort of disconnect between the dangerous machine and the desirable object. And then the other quote was Frank Bifo, Post-Futurist Manifesto, which was talking about the obsolete nature of cars and the autonomy of the body and, so I didn't write anything myself. I just stole two quotes and they gave me the job.
Great.
So we're busy with three cars and basically just doing what I do in the beginning of making something, even though showtime is in 2 days, is just like playing. Like, I find I find ideas and I want to make them operative, so I just play with my body and with other things. Because we're extending it from a 25-minute piece to an hour-long work, another layer of, I don't know if it's a narrative or whatever, it came with, like, not knowing what to do for costumes. And I didn't want to wear anything that you could buy cheaply from a shop. So I thought about kind of handmade, local, grandiose 17th century dresses that are used for the opera. But unfortunately, we couldn't get our hands on those, so we have some handmade for the 17th and 18th century costumes from the ABC.
Mm-hmm.
So
Anglo 17th and 18th century.
Totally.
Yeah.
Female dress is. So that's like another image to be consumed, which I guess in the way that we're dealing with cars, pushing cars around, and we're in like this obsolete industrial warehouse. I guess it's an environmental work, and thinking about the future of society, and perhaps we're heading, it seems at the moment, to a more feudal structure. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. So the idea for the dresses was really about this kind of queen, royal, pre-industrial revolution gowns.
Apparently one of the few things that interrupts that cycle of the rich getting richer is a war.
Yeah. Oh, well, really?
Yeah.
Or the plague.
Or the plague, yeah. Large mass extinction events.
Yeah.
Where property is destroyed and people's lives are lost.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a way that we can curb the feudal increase without resorting. So the cars move slow, though.
Yeah, the cars move slow. That was where the Post-Futurist Manifesto came in. Once we started pushing cars we realize it's nothing to do with masculine energy and aggressive power. It's a very soft, suspenseful, subtle, fragile performance. It's very slow. Depending on the car as well.
I noticed, because I've had some side jobs that have included delivery driving or moving vehicles around because you've got to move stuff around. That there's something very exoskeleton about getting into and out of 12, 15 different vehicles in a day. And if that gets smoothed over or acquired or normalized, if it's just a car that you own and you're just getting in and out of it once a day. But I imagine that none of what I'm saying will come out because of the leaf blower.
Oh, a leaf blower.
What do you think about leaf blowers?
I have one. I was using one for a piece.
Yeah. I used one for a piece.
And they hurt, like, to blow on you.
Oh.
Like, the wind is quite powerful. You used one for a piece.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Somebody in a very theatrical representational way eventually hung himself on his inability to discuss his emotional need and vulnerability with his mates on stage. And then at the very end he tried to call out for help on the two-way, but the two-way was blocked with other blokes on the radio just talking shit. And then he died. And so he let that sit for a couple of moments. And then I just flung open the door to the outside world and leaf blowered this suicide off.
Right.
And we never spoke about it or referenced it in the piece again. Completely theatrically representative of the topic that we were dealing with. What about outside of this piece? It's like started a little while ago and we'll finish in a few days.
Outside of this...
What are you busy with in, like... Is there stuff that wakes you up? You wake up thinking about? Or that hijacks your thoughts when you are waiting for a tram or something?
At the moment, there's, like, multiple projects going. So it's mostly, like, specified. So rather than, like, busy in life thinking, there's little time to sort of have space to think about anything else that's kind of not inside of the brief. But I guess maybe more generally, I feel like I left my body when I started making my own work because I was kind of bored with my own, putting my own sensual experience in front of people, or I was becoming bored of seeing other people feel something when they make dance and put it in front of me. Like, why should I watch someone feel something? So I sort of left my body and started approaching work more theoretically. Now I'm wondering about that. Now I'm finding, like, perhaps...
Maybe having your body as your superpower.
Yeah. Like, I'm getting... I'm not as stimulated as I was by things outside of myself, like images and texts and such. I mean, yeah, it's hard to speak generally, but I think, yeah, coming back to noticing what comes out of the body is something that I can see myself being more busy with in the near future. And trusting that information to work with rather than reaching outside of myself all the time.
Do you think it's just an oscillating loop? And it's like a change is as good as a holiday?
Yes, totally. But also, I don't know how it is for boys, but your body, female bodies are like, are constantly in a loop.
Mm.
So you are radically different from week to week. And I think, I mean, from moment to moment, but from week to week is probably more noticeable should you not be spending your time noticing each and every moment of your daily experience. So, yeah, there's a lot to deal with, and that's work. And then trying to, like, work on top of that, using the body and using things outside of the body and using ideas and thinking about audience and context and producers and venues and travel and accommodation. And it's really, like, yeah.
Do you ever think, though, that it's all logistics and you're just zooming in or out? Like, it's the logistics of what your performer that you've brought on board thinks in that moment, after that moment and before that moment. And then it's the logistics of where you're going to sleep that night. And then it's the logistics of how much tax you're going to get back from the fiscal year.
That affects the work?
No, just that, like, everything that we do is logistics. But somehow we do have a separation between our artistic logistic choices and our production side logistic choices or something.
I don't know, because I make decisions and I find them completely impractical and I'm not able to explain exactly why something needs to happen.
Yeah.
Logistics for me is a very, like, structured, pragmatic way of moving in life, and it's something that I find not so easy to deal with.
I've been feeling the same way,
mm-hmm.
and I've been wondering if it's, like, I was wondering if it was getting worse, actually, if my ability to sit down for 10 minutes and consider the practicalities of my next 10 minutes or 10 days or 10 weeks, if I'm losing that skill the longer that I don't use it, and somehow I was forced to use it, say, in a school environment or a uni environment, and then since then it's been rallied, I've been rallying no against all of those things, because being so pragmatic somehow is not as fun, or it's not as much of an insight into having a vision.
Yeah, I think they just affect each other. I think they're quite different, creative decisions and project managing. So, like, when I've become, when I start championing my application skills, getting jobs, and I find switching mindsets and beginning the creative work has been affected by the way in which I have to, kind of keep the other side in check. But, I mean, like, my partner Tim's an architect, and he has an amazing conceptual and creative mind, but architecture is mostly, like, project managing and dealing with, communicating with construction and engineering and making shit happen.
Mm.
And I think it would be silly to think that artistic practices should be any different if you want to, like, engage with professional context and present your work to public. Like, you can't expect to just be making creative decisions all the time. Unless, you know, you've got a good producer working for you, but the way funding is going, that model's not sustainable. And also, I like to control everything.
Yeah. But then there's the emergence of a creative producer as well, who comes on board as a collaborator of yours and trusts, I don't know, in my experience, trusts the requirements that your artistic decisions make, but then also asks you to trust the ground that they seed on your behalf. Succeed on your behalf. Yeah.
I'm yet to find that collaboration.
But, I don't know how much of a... if any collaboration ends up being what you envisioned or wanted it to be, no matter where those people come from.
Yeah.
It's been my experience in almost everything I've done because I don't know why. I think maybe I grew up in a family where we had home businesses or businesses that were close to home and had a few siblings that I seem to always end up in collaborative structures.
Mm-hmm.
Or structures that allow me to have the final say, but where I can be in the privileged position of inviting other people to add something. And then sometimes I go completely off their belief in it, not anywhere off what, like my ability to see what they're trying to get. That is why you want them around, to just say, trust me. And then for you to be able to just trust them.